Welcome to the Friday afternoon edition of Political Rewind. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting, and glad to have you with us across the state of Georgia today as we have a very special guest to introduce to you on the show. But Jim Galloway, let me first say we're glad that you're here. Jim, of course, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him on Thursdays and Sundays in the newspaper, and he oversees the AJC Political Insider blog, which is available 24 hours round the clock.
Welcome to December.
Well, I said we have a special guest, and we do. With the legislative session just about a little more than 5 weeks away, they start on Monday, January 9th. Speaker of the House David Ralston is here with us. Mr. Speaker, we're so glad to have you. We should just for people, I mean, people know who you are in terms of the work you do as Speaker, but let's just remind people, you came to the House in what, 2003 was your first session. So you've been there for just 16 years at this point. You were elected Speaker in 2010.
That's correct.
Speaker Ralston's an attorney, has a practice up in Blue Ridge. You represent Fannin County and the other counties.
Gilmer and the western portion of Dawson.
Okay. Thank you for being here today.
Great to be with you. Yeah, thank you, Bill and Jim.
First of all, how did your area survive the fires?
The fires were actually in a wilderness area west of Blue Ridge in the Cahuttas. We were fortunate in that there were no residential areas nearby, and the fires are now pretty much contained. I think probably 80% or 90% contained, and that was an estimate I was given before this week's rain. So I'm hoping that they're almost out now. It was it did burn a large area, and for a week or 10 days, the smoke, depending on the wind, was really an issue for many people in Blue Ridge and even further away, and I know even here in the metropolitan area.
Yeah, we dealt with it for a number of days. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, let's start by talking a little bit about what you imagine. Well, let me ask you a first question. How do you describe the Donald Trump victory? What does the victory of Donald Trump as President of the United States say to you about where we are as a country right now?
Well, I think it confirms the view that many of us have had that many Americans were getting very frustrated with business as usual in Washington, D.C. They were frustrated at a government that seemingly had ceased to function, or at least congressional-wise. They were worried about our position in the world, I think, as a country, rightly or wrongly. There was a perception that our leadership role on the international stage had deteriorated. So I think they were looking for someone who was outside the Washington establishment, and he spoke in a very direct way, I think, to those concerns and to those feelings. And frankly, I think you can't talk about his election without also mentioning what I heard repeatedly as I traveled across Georgia, that there was a very, very significant, how shall I say this diplomatically, Clinton fatigue. I think that many people, I heard over and over and over, people that were concerned about maybe some of the things that were raised about his past, comments that he had made, and even things he said during the campaign. But they said, "But I just can't vote for Secretary Clinton. Just can't do it." So I think that was a larger component, I think, than is getting much attention.
So, okay, now we've got Trump in the White House. Mm-hmm. as of January. You have an unbridled GOP-controlled Congress now. They've got their agenda, and y'all, I think, are going to the Georgia legislature is going to be convening first. So how does that Where are we going to see the impact in Atlanta?
Well, actually, they will convene the week before we do. Congress
will. Will they?
And then he will be inaugurated after we convene. And so his administration will begin on January 20. I think there are going to be impacts from a new government. I think in a very specific impact will be on the health care discussion. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate that you're going to hear much more discussion about Medicaid expansion. I think what you're going to hear now is more discussion on Medicaid block grants, which I'm hopeful that that's what we're going to hear, because frankly, I don't believe that you can use cookie cutter approaches in every state in the nation. You know, the states, I believe strongly, are the great laboratories of democracy. A lot of innovative things get done at the state level. And so I think the states are fully capable of implementing their own programs to administer health care for those who are uninsured. So I think the health care issue is going to be one that's going to be more immediately impacted. You know, the president-elect has talked a lot about infrastructure also, mm-hmm. and so I think, you know, I don't know how that will flesh out, but, you know, it could be that that will impact what we do on transit here in our state going forward. And so I think there are going to be some fairly immediate and fairly direct impacts from the new government.
If I could follow up on health care, I mean, does that rule out fights over other issues while we wait to see what shape the body takes on? I'm thinking specifically of certificate of need. The move to abolish that, which
make sure our listeners know what you mean when you talk about a certificate.
Exactly. This is kind of the regulatory method by which we kind of restrict competition in geographic areas of Georgia by hospitals and health clinics and such.
I don't think that the impact of a President Trump's administration will necessarily play into that debate. I anticipate that we will probably have some debate over that issue. That's a very complex issue, as you know, and one that's had a rather contentious history in the General Assembly. And so when you get into that discussion, you get into the discussion about access to health care in rural Georgia. So I don't think that will necessarily, having a new administration, will necessarily curtail the discussion on the future of CON.
Let me continue, if I could, for a couple minutes to talk about health care. Obviously, Tom Price is our nominee for HHS secretary. He, like Donald Trump, has pledged to end Obamacare. He was the only member of Congress who actually was able to pass a bill all the way to the president that President Obama vetoed, of course, that would have ended, certainly curtailed dramatically Obamacare. But if they move forward with that, we have, I think I'm right, about 600,000 Georgians who are covered under the Affordable Care Act. How do you feel about what the measures might be to protect those Georgians at the same time that the Congress is looking at unwinding Obamacare but not ready to put a new plan in place?
Well, I think and first of all, let me say that I'm very, very excited about the choice of Congressman Price for this position. I had the pleasure of serving with him on the Senate side of the Capitol back in the 90s, and so I think it's going to be kind of cool to be able to say that I served in the Georgia State Senate with a member of the President's Cabinet, and it may not be the only one that I served with when all's said and done, but
We should say you're talking about the fact that Sonny Perdue was up in Trump Tower today talking to he was there Wednesday talking, and there's talk he might be agriculture secretary.
And he got his start in the Georgia State
right.
Senate, too. But I think Tom Price is going to do a great job. Tom is a very bright, capable individual who understands this issue in a way that no one that's had that position has understood it from a provider perspective, being a medical doctor. And so I'm excited that he's going to be in one of the more significant positions in our federal government. Tom's proposal, as I understand it, has been not just to repeal Obamacare, but to repeal and replace.
Yes.
And so he has had, in a very specific way, a proposal that would say, okay, we're going to repeal Obamacare, but here's what we're going to do to replace it. So that makes me optimistic because, you know, it's easy to say and it's easy to do from what I'm being told to repeal Obamacare. The question then is, what do you do then? And what we do then hasn't been fully answered yet by the new administration, and that's what we're waiting to see. And again, I go back to answer the second part of your question. We do have many, far too many uninsured Georgians, and so I'm intrigued and by and am supportive of the block grant proposal, and let's cut the strings that come with that, and let's let Georgia design a system here to take care of our uninsured, because I suspect it'll look a lot different here than what North Dakota, for example, might do, or California, or any other state. We have, as every state does, unique circumstances and unique conditions and needs, and so I think that I'm hoping that will be a large part of the replacement part of repeal and replace.
Let's move, if we can, to issues that are much more immediately in your wheelhouse. You're coming back into a session after the governor vetoed two hugely controversial but also pretty popular bills that passed the House and the Senate at the end of last session. Religious liberty and campus carry. I know that religious liberty was a little more problematic, especially in your side of the building, Mr. Speaker. But what do you see as the mood that your members are bringing into the session in terms of working with Governor Deal? Is there resentment? And Jim Galloway posed a really good question about this, which is that right. They have a chance to.
Oh yeah, yeah. If there's going to be an override of those two vetoes, it has to be the very first order of business.
Yeah.
The legislator gets. But so far, I've heard no talk about that. Am I right?
I haven't heard a lot of discussion about overrides. I think that my sense is that the more preferable approach is if we revisit, for example, the Second Amendment issue with campus carry, that the preferable approach would be to let's sit down and see if we can address whatever concerns may still be out there. I mean, that's why we went through that process last session, frankly, and didn't hear too much about concerns. And we passed a bill out of the House. The Senate didn't change a punctuation mark in it, and they passed it. And
then you had a very long veto message that was named a quite a few specific concerns.
Well, even before the veto message, you had the governor, after you had gone through that entire exercise, coming back and saying, well, if you would make these changes that I'm recommending, we might be able to do business. But he hadn't made his voice heard in that debate up until it was a little late, yes?
Well, the bill had been passed.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how you change a bill after it's passed both chambers, but But I think that's the I think that would be my own preference. I mean, look, we've had a good team at work in state government between the lieutenant governor and the Senate and our chamber and the governor's office, and I think Georgians appreciate that. And so I had rather sit down and see if we, as the book of Isaiah exhorts us to do, to come, let us reason together and address these concerns. Now, having said that, I think there is still, certainly on the Second Amendment issue, there's still a strong desire, in, at least in the House, to strengthen our constitutional protections. And so I anticipate that will be a primary issue.
Mm-hmm. How about religious liberty? I was when I talked to Johnny Isaacson about this, back in June, right after his primary victory, he said that this is a federal issue, that it ought to be something decided by Congress. And now we do have, you know, a Congress that can pass a bill to a president and not expect a veto. I'm presuming we've got an end to gridlock. So do we let that issue sit for a year, or do we take it up again?
I agree with Johnny Isaacson. I think it is a federal issue, and so I'm very content to let them deal with it. You know, I don't hear much discussion about it. There was a lot of concern in the period of time right after the veto, I think as people have kind of stepped back and taken a look at it, I think they realize that it's a little bit more complex and involves, it has dimensions rather that you might not suspect when you flash up the words religious freedom or religious liberty, because you know, we all believe in that, and certainly I do. So I think it would be healthy for the Congress to have a debate, and let's see what they do.
You don't. I realize he's not coming to you for any advice on this, but Josh McCoon, Senator McCoon, doesn't seem to want to let this lie on the table for the session. So presumably it is going to come back in some form or another, and you're probably going to have to deal with it, yes?
Well, I don't really I haven't paid any attention to what that member of the Senate has said on this issue. You know, my responsibility is to take care of the House of Representatives, you know, I'm going to do the best I can to respond to its will.
Yeah.
You know, we found out, I think, last session that this issue is difficult. I mean, you know, look at North Carolina. I haven't checked this out, and I'm going to say something, and Galloway's probably going to have me fact-checked, but I don't think many Republicans in North Carolina lost on general election day.
Just the governor.
I think he was the only one.
Right.
I
don't think he's conceded yet, but he's down by 10,000 votes.
Right.
Well,
it was Pat McCrory. Yeah.
Right. And you know, Governor McCrory certainly became kind of the Exhibit A on this issue, and you know, they've had a lot of fallout from their decision to adopt a similar measure up there, and so I think that it would be, frankly, it would be irresponsible of us to ignore that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I was going to ask you what the implications were about McCrory's apparent loss in the governor's race. And so on one hand, you're suggesting to us that you think that's a cautionary tale. At the same time, you're making note of the fact that except for him, most other Republicans who voted for the transgender bathroom ban and the religious liberty issue didn't pay a penalty for it.
Well, because I think that the issue became associated with him,
okay,
probably in more in a more tangible way than perhaps some of the members of the General Assembly up there. And let me just say before we leave this issue, we've had this debate for three sessions now, I suppose, at the Capitol. And so after the Supreme Court decision in the summer of 2015, we decided to try to find a reasonable and responsible way of addressing it. And so we put together what became known as the Pastor Protection Act. I would remind you and the listeners, that passed the Georgia House unanimously.
Yep, right.
Unanimously. We may go back and try that again, or we haven't really decided yet. But I thought that was a good, responsible piece of legislation that addressed the real concerns of many Georgians.
Well, on that note, there's always some tension between the House and the Senate over who picks up what issue and who moves another issue.
We should say, without regard to who happens to be presiding over either body,
exactly.
It's a historical tension.
Yeah, this is always whether it's Tom Murphy and Zell Miller or David Ralston and Casey Cagle. There's always a kind of a little tension over whose agenda is pressed first. So what issues would you like to see the House take up vis-a-vis what issues you're going to require the Senate to take up if it's going to move?
Well, you're right on the history.
And this is also a truly mischievous question by Galloway.
Well, you'd never know it from the fact that you both are laughing as you ask it.
Let the record show that show is your staffer.
I started my political life in the Senate under Pierre Howard, who was lieutenant governor, and there was a speaker named Thomas Murphy in the House, and so I got 6 years worth of watching that tension and that rivalry, and then it carried forward. But I have to tell you, Casey Cagle is a friend of mine, but that doesn't diminish the fact that, we have pride in being the House, and I'm sure they do too, in being the Senate. I've been proud of our House. We have led on, over the past 7 years that I've been honored to be in this position, we've led on some major initiatives. Immigration reform, that was a House bill. Tax reform was a House bill. The charter school measure that we passed 3 or 4 years ago was a House bill. And then more recently, and one that I'm very proud of, transportation funding reform was a House bill. So this the Georgia House of Representatives has led, and I've been very pleased with that. So maybe it is time that we've got a lot of work on the budget, and the budget starts in the House. And, while we're doing the budget, we may encourage our Senate brothers and sisters to try their hand at some of these measures, and we'll see what they can do.
Well, and of course, there's a governor's race starting to take shape, and there's a pretty strong suspicion that your friend across the building there, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, may very well decide to be a candidate. So you would think this would be an opportune moment for him to be able to take the lead on some of the issues.
Maybe on education funding?
Maybe. Or maybe on some of the issues we've just talked about. I have a lot of respect for the Lieutenant Governor, and I don't know he hasn't confided in me his plans. All I know is what I read in Jim's newspaper. on that, this is going to be a good opportunity for any number of people, I think, in the General Assembly to show some real leadership this session.
We've only got a couple minutes left with you, and if I could, there are a couple of other issues I think people would like to hear your thoughts on. The Opportunity School District, Nathan Deal's big first step in education reform, or one of his first, the biggest step so far, failed. At the ballot box. What is the next step for education reform in the session coming up and beyond?
Well, you know, we're looking at that now. I supported the governor in that initiative and spoke out for that everywhere I went in Georgia. I think that those people who supported the initiative probably underestimated the opposition. Having said that, you know, we can dissect what happened all day long and for weeks and months. The reality is we've still got children in schools in Georgia that are failing. And so I would like for some of the people who were very vocal in their opposition to this, I'd like to hear their thoughts now, if they have any, or their ideas on what do we do about that. You know, we're looking at some measures in the House, and I know I've got a couple of members that I've met with and that have given some very, very good thought and some that may have some proposals that we'll be ready to talk about in the not-too-distant future. But at the end of the day, we still have a problem, and it's not going to go away by the defeat of that amendment.
Well, but, okay, so Governor Deal could be taking the next step, presumably. He, for two sessions now, has put off reforming the Quality Basic Education Funding Act, which, as most of our listeners by now know, distributes funds across the state, tries to equalize them to some extent, giving poorer school districts more money to work with. Is it time for that bill to come forward? And is it time for you to at least debate it?
Well, it's time for us to work on it. I don't know where the proposal is. I know that you'll recall that the governor appointed a commission a couple of years ago to look into this issue, and I think they were sort of on the brink of making some recommendations right before the last session, and then. I think many of us heard from teachers, for example, that they had not been included in that process, which I respectfully disagreed with excluding them, if that was the intent or not including them. I thought they should have a place at the table, and the governor recognized that and created the Teacher Advisory Council about a year ago, and I know they've been looking at some of these things. I'm anxious to hear from them, and I think that is an issue. You know, this is an issue, Bill, and you know, you've covered the Capitol a long time. Many governors have talked about doing something, and no one has really took the ball across the goal line. And so, I think the important thing is that we keep plugging till we find a solution. Going forward.
Well, let me ask it a slightly different way. Do you believe, in fact, that a new formula for distributing funds to schools across the state, so there is some version of equalization, is an important step to improving schools?
I absolutely do.
Okay. And then the follow-up is it a politically possible step?
Right.
It's a politically difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Because what you're doing is asking the wealthier school systems, a Cobb County, a Gwinnett County, whatever, to give some of their tax dollars to those poorer districts, which makes it incredibly volatile.
It does. It does. And I remember when we debated this back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the debate in the Senate on a Friday and having some of my colleagues from, and I'm just going to name names here, from Cobb County, complaining about this. And I pointed out to one of them that when I left that afternoon to drive north to Blue Ridge, I would probably meet a third or half of my House district driving to Cobb County to spend money. It's not an easy thing to fix,
right?
Obviously.
So we've We've said we were going to keep you here for about a half hour. We're just about at that time, and we want to be good to our word, Mr. Speaker. But let me ask you one last question.
Sure.
I know that you all like to play your cards close to the vest as the session unfolds because you always have something you want to hold out to bargain over, whatever. But is there one measure that you personally are invested in this session that you would really like to accomplish? Is there any one bill that matters enormously to you this session?
Well, obviously, believe it or not, the bill that matters most to me is passing a balanced budget. You know, the budget says a lot about us as a state and what our priorities are. So that's my number one objective. Beyond that, and that budget will include something that is way past due, which is making our compensation for our state law enforcement personnel more competitive. That's important to me. When I found out last session that we're the number one state in the nation in which to do business, but we were paying our state law enforcement, the base salary was number 50, I thought that was a shameful to us as a state. I've got another little bill, the firefighter workers' comp bill that we passed last year.
Which was vetoed as well, correct?
Which was vetoed. That bill matters a lot to me. I think when you ask firefighters to be in the conditions that they are in and then make the workers' comp system a stacked deck against them when they contract respiratory conditions or cancer is unfortunate.
Well,
and I'm hoping that we can address the concerns on that and get a good bill passed and signed into law.
We really appreciate it. By the way, one of our tweeters wants to know whether we're going to have casino gambling. You're going to hold the line against casino gambling again this session?
You know, I would not bet on casino gambling this session.
Speaker of the House, David Ralston, it's been really a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for taking time. We look forward to watching the session unfold. It starts Monday, January 9th. By the way, the same day that Political Rewind will officially expand to 3 days a week, 2 o'clock Mondays and Wednesdays, 3 o'clock still on Fridays. Thank you so much for being here. We'll be watching the session closely from this studio as you go through it.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Jim.
Hope to have you back.
Thank you.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks. I'm gonna get in my car.
Thanks for listening to Political Rewind here on Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Tanya Ott. Be sure to stay tuned for All Things Considered, which starts at 4 o'clock, and then at 6 o'clock, we've got Marketplace. You can follow the news of the day on Twitter, at GPB News.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Speaker Ralston, leaving the studio. He's probably got more work to do. They go out to Athens on Sunday, the Carl Vinson Institute of Government has an annual conference, as you well know.
Biennial conference.
Biennial.
Built around the newcomers who are coming in.
New legislators, but as the Speaker pointed out as we were talking to him before the show, they also now include policy programs.
It's going to be the first chance for lawmakers, and maybe hopefully us if they talk, to get a first peek at what the budget expectations are to where does the governor set the amount of income that the state's expected to have over the next 18 months?
Yeah, one of the most crucial decisions that any governor has to make on an annual basis. We're going to be doing a special edition of Political Rewind this coming Monday, and your colleague Greg Bluestein, I know you'll be out there too.
I may be out there Tuesday rather than Monday. I'm not sure yet.
All right. Well, Greg Bluestein's going to be out there, and he'll be joining us for the special edition from Athens. We'll talk a lot about what's going on there, as well as all the Trump transition news that's coming out. So, what did you hear from?
I heard a great deal of news.
Yeah.
Most specifically, The fact that he hopes that to give the legislature a year's break on a debate over religious liberty, hoping that the Congress will take that up.
Do you think that he's going to get any help from the Senate on that, though, Jim? He has never wanted to debate religious liberty. That was the whole point of his introducing the Pastor Protection Act last
session. Right. And he was, and the House was, and he was kind of forced into supporting the result that went to the governor, which was vetoed. I think a lot will depend on how the debate over religious liberty fits into the 2018 race for governor. I think it'll have to start in the Senate. I think that was another signal that the Speaker gave, that this is something that's going to have to start on that side of the chamber. And then, Josh McCune of Columbus will probably be the one of the authors of it. But then let's see where it goes from there, if it makes it out of the chamber. It may not benefit a Casey Cagle who is thinking of running for governor.
Well,
if he's interested in getting a lot of financial support from the business community.
Of course, that seems right, except that he did last year embrace those conservative evangelicals.
Exactly.
He kind of
positioned himself as the protector of religious liberty. So it's a delicate balance. But what we heard just a few moments ago was the Speaker saying, please take this cup away from me this year.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I thought was interesting. It wasn't surprising. Nevertheless, I thought it was interesting. For years, the quality basic education funding formula was passed by Governor Joe Frank Harris. I think it was 1985, 86 maybe.
Right.
Right in that time frame. First time the state had ever made an effort to do what the Speaker talked about, which is to distribute tax money to districts that don't have a tax base that supports schools.
Right.
They've been talking about changing that formula for decades, and Nathan Deal specifically has been talking about it throughout his tenure and keeps putting it off. And here today again, Speaker Ralston, who would have to obviously carry the ball should he choose to through the House, is saying how difficult it is and isn't quite ready to say, yes, it's time to do it now.
Right. What the opportunity school district fight, the proposed constitutional amendment that Governor Deal put up that would have allowed the state to take control of specific failing schools. The failure of that really was erupted around the objections of local school boards, which are political animals, and they carry clout in their communities. And they have got, when we talk about redistributing wealth in Georgia for education's sake, they have to be on board. And that may not be, they might need some massaging now after this fight. Further, what you've got is you had, I believe, two Republican House members lose their seats in November. It was overall, it was a great year for Republicans in Georgia. But you had Michael Chokas in Americus, and another Republican in Gwinnett, whose name just immediately escapes me right now. And both of them, I think, would blame the fight over the OSD, over this constitutional amendment for it. So you're not going to have your House is going to be a little bit wary, I think, of taking these issues up.
I was interested when Speaker Ralston talked about the number of governors, and you and I have watched them, who have tried to do something about education reform, come up with significant proposals, pass them. And Speaker Ralston, as he points out quite correctly, we've never quite crossed the goal line in that. Of course, one of the reasons we haven't is every administration that comes along unwinds what the previous administration does and starts from scratch, essentially. Governor Barnes, Roy Barnes, in the late 90s, probably came closer to a holistic approach to education reform. And to some extent, the fight to get there was one of the reasons he lost re-election.
Right, and it's a fight that, and the lesson of that has been for governors is to leave that to your second term.
Right.
And here we are in the second term of Nathan Deal, well into it, and now and that's the real impact of that loss in November.
So before we wrap that up, anything else you want to comment? We got a lot of other things we can talk about. Any other quick thing?
Well,
that
just
really
a guarantee that we're going to have another fight over campus carry.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big deal.
All right, we'll watch that unfold. You know what? Why don't we waited a long time to take a break. Jenny, can we get our second break out of the way? Let's come back. Donald Trump was really astonishing to watch last night in his first public appearance since he was elected on election, his appearance since election night. Let's come back and talk a little bit about that. This is Political Rewind at 3:46.
After a mass shooting, first responders go in, treat survivors, and turn off victims' cell phones so no one hears the ringing.
I called Shannon's phone and it went straight to voicemail. So I kind of knew he was dead.
A crisis counselor who lost her fiancé in the San Bernardino shootings. Next on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered starting at 4 o'clock this afternoon right here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jim, of course, Donald Trump made a victory speech on election night at about, I think it was about 2:30 or so in the morning, maybe even 3 o'clock. He made remarks that a lot of people listened to and said, oh, thank goodness. He takes this seriously. He talked calmly. He talked with a sense of inclusion that he felt was important for the country. And then he hasn't really talked publicly since then.
No, it's the biggest silence, I think, by a president-elect that we've had in modern U.S. history.
Yeah. So yesterday he went to, first he was in Indiana, where he went to celebrate the fact that the campaign pledge he had made, that he was going to rescue the jobs that Carrier was going to send to Mexico, where they're building a new plant. He went to celebrate the fact that through negotiations, they have managed to rescue about 1,000 of those 2,000 jobs.
Yeah, maybe 1,100, but still a good number are still going to Mexico.
And he was pretty much on prompter for those remarks at Carrier. But then last night he went to Cincinnati, where he had one of his arena-style rallies. And it was an astonishing thing to watch for a president-elect of the United States.
The campaign isn't over.
Let's listen. I want to listen to both sides of Donald Trump. Here's one side of Donald Trump last night.
There is no global anthem, no global currency, no certificate of global citizenship. We pledge allegiance to one flag, and that flag is the American flag.
So that's the nationalist Donald Trump.
That was from Cincinnati.
Yes.
That was from Cincinnati, and I think that was the heart of that address last night.
Exactly. And that's also the Steve Bannon influence, it strikes me. That's the real nationalistic approach that a guy like Bannon is going to continue to emphasize during the Trump administration.
The thing to watch is not how it affects domestically, but what the implications this has for the U.S. militarily and in foreign affairs.
Talk about that.
Well, you've got, for instance, we had the Pakistani Information Ministry kind of give us a transcript of what of Trump's conversation with the president of Pakistan, and it was an amazing document. That basically, Donald Trump talks to foreign leaders just like he talks to you and me,
yeah,
and everybody else, in this hyperbolic kind of showmanship way that takes different meanings when you're talking about foreign when you're talking to the leader of Pakistan, which is in a nuclear confrontation with India, and you say you'll do anything to help them. You've chosen a side. That's a
including saying maybe you'll visit.
Exactly.
A presidential visit has such enormous consequences. Where a president chooses to travel tells you a lot about where he's staking his claim and his future in terms of negotiations.
Right. Even stop by and see me at the White House when you come.
It's interesting, the Pakistani government's readout, as they call it, of that conversation, in which they say he told Mr. Sharif that he was a, quote, terrific guy. I feel like I'm talking to a person I've known for a long time. This is a whole new style. Aside from the geopolitical consequences of this, you've got to say this is going to be really interesting to watch as it unfolds.
Right, right. Look, you know, look, when Don, there was a, I don't know if we've got the right sound from that session, that seminar at Harvard yesterday, in which you saw a kind of a near brawl between the Clinton and the Trump forces. But at one point, you've got Corin Lewandowski, who was at one point the Trump campaign manager, says, look, media, you guys made a terrible mistake. You believed everything that Donald Trump said, whereas his supporters knew he was just exaggerating. Yeah. Well, you know, we are in a new world where you can't trust what the president we're being advised not to trust what the president says.
I want to stick with Trump. We'll come back to that. But I want to stick with Trump for another minute. Here too, again, a different shade of Donald Trump in Cincinnati last night. Let's listen to his broader philosophy about how we should all get along.
We condemn bigotry and prejudice in all of its forms. We denounce all of the hatred, and we forcefully reject the language of exclusion and separation. We're going to come together. We have no choice. We have to, and it's better. It's better. We seek a future where every American child is fully included in the American dream. We're going to have our own American dream. And we're going to bring back the American dream.
All right. That sounded good. That's
sure,
Donald
yeah,
Trump
yeah.
with a vision. You know, a philosophy that's bringing us all together. And yet a little later, here's Donald Trump off the teleprompter.
They said, Georgia is in play. Texas is in play. That means like we're even. And then we won in a landslide both states. I said, what happened? Right? They go, for weeks, Texas is in play. Then you turn on the television like 2 minutes later. Donald Trump has won Texas, you know. So. These are very, very dishonest people.
Donald Trump talking about the media.
Yeah, you and me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're dishonest.
We're in for a fascinating first term of how the media and Trump and the Trump administration are going to deal with one another.
And I think it's going to be not very well. I think that's the answer, and I think we just all have to get comfortable to the fact that we are going to be his punching bag for the next 4 years.
Yeah. Okay, let's listen. You talked about the Harvard session yesterday where leaders of the Clinton team and leaders of the Trump team sat down. Over the years, those sessions are typical following an election, and Harvard is often the convener. I actually participated in a couple of those back when I was covering campaigns. And they're usually really informative, relatively cordial affairs.
And usually this has been where you get your first kind of backroom look at what actually happened.
Yes, exactly. Well, yesterday didn't go so well. There were a lot of exchanges. The one that I thought was where you could actually hear people talk because there were individual voices as opposed to screaming at each other was this one with Jennifer Palmieri of the Clinton, one of the top officials in the Clinton campaign, and Kellyanne Conway, of course, Donald Trump's campaign manager, going at it.
I am more proud of Hillary Clinton's all right speech than any other moment on the campaign because she had the courage to stand up. I would rather lose than win the way you guys did.
No, you wouldn't.
No,
you wouldn't.
Yes.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes. Yes.
No, that's very clear today. No, you wouldn't, respectfully.
No.
Rather, I'm sorry.
So,
how exactly did we win? No, go for it, Jen. How exactly did we win? I'd like to know because I've sacrificed the last 4 months of my life to do it. Excuse me. and we did it. And we did it by looking at the schedule and looking at, yes, the electoral map of 270, because that's how you win the presidency. And we went places and we were either ignored or mocked roundly by most of the people in this room. But I have a smile on my face at all times.
Nothing like a gracious winner, Jim, Kellyanne Conway.
Well, that was one of the points that Trump kind of underlined. He was talking about a landslide victory last night, and I'm sorry, it was not a landslide victory.
Yeah, the electoral map was a shock.
It was a phenomenal victory
for him.
It was a phenomenal victory, but it wasn't a landslide. Even in
the
electoral,
right?
It ranks, you know, maybe 12 down,
right.
in terms of victories.
Right, and right now Hillary Clinton's up by 2.5 million votes in the popular vote,
and that kind of rubs. The Donald, I think.
We're really close to out of time. We're going to watch all that unfold. Obviously there are very serious and sober political and global consequences to the way Donald Trump runs his White House. But like his campaign, it is also going to be a fascinating thing to watch unfold. Yes?
Yeah. This is going to be the stock car race of American politics.
All right. Real quick, we don't have a whole lot of time. You wrote a really interesting column about the impact that Jeff Sessions, if in fact he is confirmed as Attorney General, could have here in Georgia on medical marijuana.
Right.
Why?
Right. We've got another fight over medical marijuana that Alan Peake is going to bring in the state capitol. You've got Vincent Fort in the mayoral race, who's talking about deprioritizing marijuana enforcement within the city of Atlanta. And yet you've got your attorney general is one of the biggest critics of Obama's kind of neglect of marijuana.
Federal marijuana
laws. And more importantly, Tom Price has been a consistent voice against the use of medical marijuana in places like the VA.
And as you point out, one more obstacle, perhaps, that Alan Peake, in his battle to bring medical marijuana to families that believe they really need is going to have to fight.
Right. You could see Jeff Sessions try to go after California, Colorado, other states where recreational use is now legal.
All right. We're out of time. It was really, I really enjoyed, didn't you, being able to talk to Speaker Ralston about the session?
I think he's got a fascinating voice for radio.
Yeah.
I'd want him on every day.
Just so people know, Steve Henson, the minority leader in the Senate, Democrat in the Senate, will be here next Friday. So we'll hear what Democrats are saying about the session. And in the meantime, we're out of time for today's show. My thanks to Tyler Morris, to senior producer Jenny Ament, James Rising, our intern Robert Jimison, who's homesick today. Get well, Robert. Thank you all for the work you do on the show. We will be back Monday at 2 o'clock with a special edition of Political Rewind, because right now there's just too much to talk about to not be on the air with you, talking in dialogue with you, which you can do if you join us on Twitter, following us at PoliticsGPB. Jim, thanks so much for being here. I'll see you on Wednesday's show at 2 o'clock.
Right.
Take care.